This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 20 books, including Feminist Fantasies. And now the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
Communist China has sold Americans a dazzling array of counterfeits and forgeries, including copyrighted books and music, expensive fashion apparel, and prescription drugs with ingredients that kill. China's latest venture into fakery is fake alcohol. The counterfeiters collect empty bottles of genuine alcohol, refill them with a cheap substitute from who knows where, and then resell this counterfeit alcohol to popular bars and restaurants in Beijing. The police discovered 37,000 bottles of this fake alcohol ready to be delivered. China's fake alcohol is generally made from one of three bases: ethylene glycol, which is antifreeze, which attacks the kidneys and heart and is potentially fatal; methanol, which attacks the retinal nerve and can result in blindness; and isopropyl, that's the name for rubbing alcohol. The China Bee Products Association claims that half of all honey sold in China is fake. The final Harry Potter movie was available in Chinese bookstores before it was released by the publisher. Beijing shops sell fake Gucci. One reporter saw a gift shop selling a suitcase full of fake U.S. $100 bills. Now let me give you an update on how Communist China is replacing the United States as the world's car maker. The company we all used to know as General Motors, which after it was bailed out by the U.S. taxpayers, is now informally called Government Motors, recently announced it will build a billion-dollar factory to manufacture Cadillacs in Communist China. Of course, the U.S. corporation had to get permission from Chinese communist authorities to build its factory and had to make it a joint venture with the Chinese company. Even the Wall Street Journal criticized GM for investing so many billions of dollars in China after getting bailed out by the U.S. taxpayers in 2009.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. Chances are you or someone you care about is unemployed or underemployed. At eagleforum.org, in a blog conversation with Phyllis Schlafly, we're weighing the causes and solutions of this national crisis. One thing is certain, more government spending is not the answer. Join the blog at eagleforum.org. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
John Stadtmiller here. Sometimes in life, you get lucky. Well, today is your lucky day. Our sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, have just announced their biggest savings yet on their one-month food supply by Linden Farms. This great one-month pack includes over 360 servings based on 2,000 calories per day. While supplies last, you'll get one free month of long-term emergency food entrees when you buy three. This is a massive savings of $600 on a four-month supply. Again, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is giving you buy 3 months, get an additional 1 month of food free. This is a great deal. Act fast. The site again is AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com or call them directly at 818-720-0759, 818-720-0759. Let them know John sent you. Do it today. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, veteran-owned and operated.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Extend your life with Extendover. My name is Don Wiskin. I had a massive heart attack at 42. The doctors could do nothing but send me home with disability as my future. I reversed the damage done to my heart with a natural remedy. I am now 58 and contribute my good health today to Extendivite. You have heard my messages for many years. A lot of people have taken Extendivite and improved their health issues. We are surrounded by fast food, toxic air, and chemicals that our body cannot eliminate. As we age, they can age us faster. Clean yourself out with Extendivite, available in capsule or liquid form. Get a 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. You can live a longer, healthier life just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
December 5th, 2013, this is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny but cold suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. You will see the names of every guest that I've had on the program since October 23rd, 2010, as well as links to their websites. You will also see guests that I already have lined up for future programs. Just visit the website and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.info. A site that one of our wonderful, very talented listeners created. You will find some very good files and links there. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is James Perloff. That is P-E-R-L-O-F-F. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior. It is available at Amazon. He is also the author of The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline. He has some other books also. Today we are going to talk about something that happened a few decades back. Jim, are you with us?
Sure am. Thank you.
Oh, great. Very, very good. Okay, you have a very timely topic today, and it's something that we should all be thinking about in a couple of days. And it really got America into World War II.
Yes, and that's, of course, the attack on Pearl Harbor and December 7th coming up in a couple of days is what is known as Pearl Harbor Day. And I'm going to talk today about some of the things that are going on behind the scenes. And I know that a lot of younger listeners, Deanna, who are involved in, say, the 911 truth movement are familiar with more recent false flags, but they may not be familiar with this one. And so we're going to go over all the details that are relevant to Pearl Harbor today.
Okay, sounds great.
And we're going to talk a little bit about what was going on in World War II and the Illuminati goal of knocking the Japanese aside, really to clear the way for communism in Asia. We're also going to talk about Franklin D. Roosevelt, President Roosevelt's attempts to provoke Japan into war, his decision to base the fleet in Pearl Harbor against all military advice. We'll also talk about Washington's foreknowledge of the attack, and finally we'll talk about the investigations that occurred post-attack that whitewashed Washington and put the blame on the U.S. military.
Okay. And there were certainly a lot of corruption and a lot of intentions in Washington, and they were plotting it for several months beforehand, or several years, actually.
Yes, this was a growing objective. And let me just start out by talking a little bit about World War II. And what the Illuminati were aiming at. in World War II, they had three principal objectives, which are actually extensions of their motives in World War I. The first of the three is world government, and which is pretty obvious. You see the League of Nations coming out of World War I, and, of course, the stronger UN out of World War II, designed by the same forces. And some would say if we ever had a World War III, we'd have an all-powerful world government. The second was Zionism. I'm sure many of your listeners know that out of World War I in 1917 came the Balfour Declaration, by which Britain pledged to the Zionists to establish a national homeland in Palestine for Jews, even though Britain had no authority or presence historically in Palestine. That's why they invaded it. That's why you had Lawrence of Arabia, although he did not know what the plot that he was a part of. But, of course, invading Palestine had no relevance to winning World War I. But in World War II, of course, you had the outcome of the State of Israel itself in 1948. And the third objective related to communism in 1917, the same year as the Balfour Declaration, you had the so-called Russian Revolution. The Tsar abdicated. And in World War II, you had communism extending itself from Russia to all of Eastern Europe and into Asia. And it's this latter, the extension of communism, where Pearl Harbor and Japan come into play.
Indeed. And they always have such other rationalizations for doing what they do. And they use the media to get the population, the American population, all revved up to go to war and kill people that really has nothing whatsoever to do with anything that they've done to us. And as you mentioned before, this is a false flag, and we can certainly make some comparisons to the current false flags that are going on.
Right. I'd like to start with sort of a lateral comparison to what was going on in World War II in Europe to start with. Now, World War II, we're told, officially began September the 1st, 1939, when after Germany invaded Poland, Britain and France declared war on Germany, and we're supposed to believe that the France and Britain cared so much about the national sovereignty of Poland that they were willing to lay down the lives of their sons to preserve the precious sovereignty of Poland. But here's the thing. In September of 1939, Stalin's Soviet Red Army also invaded Poland. And what was the British and French reaction to that? Nothing. It was yawn. It was ho-hum. And how could that be? You know, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. If you're declaring war on Germany because you're concerned about Poland's sovereignty, they should have declared war on the Soviet Union, too, but they did not. And, of course, Uncle Joe soon became the recipient of convoys of aid from Britain. But even at the end of the war, Deanna, we had this same contradiction. At the end of the war, Poland lost its sovereignty. It was occupied by Soviet tanks. Stalin set up a puppet regime, and who cared? Did Britain or France or America care? And the answer is no. It was like, who cares about Poland's sovereignty? Well, wait a minute. We just fought a war where 60 million people died, and it was allegedly begun over the concern over Poland's sovereignty. Now when the war is over, nobody cares that Poland has lost that sovereignty. But as we're going to see, there is an analogy to this hypocrisy taking place over in the Far East. What we were told was, in the 1930s, Japan sent its troops into Manchuria, which is commonly perceived as the northernmost portion of China, even though the Manchurians did not consider themselves Chinese. And we were told this is part of Japan's plan for world conquest. But here's what Americans were not told. They were not told that before Japan sent its troops into Manchuria, the Soviet Union, Stalin's Red Army, had entered Outer Mongolia in the northwestern province of China called Xinjiang. And, of course, communism had engulfed all of the Soviet Union, not just Russia, but there was Belarus, also called White Russia, the Ukraine, Georgia, Turkestan, and all the little republics that made it to the Soviet Union. Next on the Illuminati agenda was Asia. And the Soviets had moved into, as I said, Outer Mongolia and Xinjiang. And I don't want people just to think I'm making this up, so I'd like to give you a quote. I don't know if we have time before the break, but this is from Dr. Anthony Kubik, who is chairman of the Political Science Department at University of Dallas. In his book, How the Far East Was Lost, he wrote, quote, "It was apparent to Japanese statesmen that unless bastions of defense were built in Manchuria and Inner Mongolia, communism would spread through all of North China and threaten the security of Japan. To the Japanese, Manchuria was a national imperative, but the Department of State seemed not to regard Japan as a bulwark against Soviet expansion in North China. As a matter of fact, not one word of protest was sent by the Department of State to the Soviet Union, despite her absorption of Xinjiang and Outer Mongolia, while at the same time, Japan was censured for stationing troops in China, unquote, Dr. Anthony Kubik. So you see this hypocrisy. It's okay for Stalin to invade Poland, but not Germany. It's okay for Stalin to invade China, but not Japan. This hypocrisy will carry forth through the war.
Indeed. All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
Our infrastructure is failing and our government is corrupt. We have some hard times ahead. If there was no way to get medical help, what would you do? How are you going to protect the safety of your family during a crisis when there are no doctors, hospitals, emergency services, or supplies? Supernatural Silver is the answer. Supernatural Silver is a nano-engineered silver unlike any other silver product on the market today. This technology has advanced antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal properties. And more than 200 independent clinical studies and trials have shown that it's effective in over 500 different uses. Supernatural Silver can be stockpiled and stored for over 10 years. And in a collapse, it could be priceless. It can be used daily to fight off colds, flus, and other pathogens, and yet it's powerful enough to combat some of the most deadly diseases in the world today. Make sure your home is well stocked with Supernatural Silver. To order, go to supernaturalsilver.com. That's supernaturalsilver.com. Use the promo code SILVER2013 for 20% off, and like us on Facebook.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with hawthorn, glucosamine chondroitin, sea cucumber, colloidal minerals, superfam and super male plex, colon enhancer, our top selling liquid, cow mag vitamin D, MSM sulfur capsules, and elderberry power capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior. It's his current book, available at Amazon. And today he's talking about Pearl Harbor, what led up to it, making some comparisons to what happened in Europe. So please continue.
Right. Well, first of all, I just want to mention that the Japanese movement into Manchuria was based on very similar principles to ones that we've practiced. They were trying to stop the expansion of communism into the sphere of Asia. You might recall that, of course, in the 1960s, America sent troops all the way around the world to Vietnam because we felt that it was in our national self-interest to stop the spread of communism there. So imagine how much more so that was true for the Japanese, looking at the spread of Soviet troops just 300 miles across the Sea of Japan. And one more comparison I might make would be the Monroe Doctrine, which was articulated in 1823, where the United States said, we're not going to allow foreign powers into our hemisphere to interfere here or colonize. The Japanese were really deploying their own version of the Monroe Doctrine, which said we're not going to allow foreign powers, namely Stalin and the Soviet Union, into the Asian sphere. We're going to stop that from happening. But that's not how it was represented to the American public. It was represented instead as world conquest on their part. And I also want to bring out that the Soviet Union was very interested in getting a war going between America and Japan. I'm going to quote from Benjamin Gitlow. He was a founding member of the United States Communist Party. He finally renounced the party and wrote a book in 1940 called I Confess. And here's what he wrote, quote, when I was in Moscow, the attitude towards the United States in the event of war was discussed. Privately, it was the opinion of all Russian leaders to whom I spoke that the rivalry between the United States and Japan must break out into war between these two, unquote. And I'll also give you a quote from our own State Department. William C. Bullitt was ambassador to Moscow. He wrote in 1935, quote, it is the heartiest hope of the Soviet government that the United States will become involved in war with Japan. The Soviet Union would certainly attempt to avoid becoming an ally until Japan had been thoroughly defeated and would then merely use the opportunity to acquire Manchuria and Sovietize China, unquote. And, of course, Deanna, we know that's exactly what happened. Stalin joined the war against the Japanese, but not until after we bombed Hiroshima with the atomic bomb. They ended the war in the Pacific 5 days before Japan surrendered, poured into China. And, of course, the outcome was the Sovietization of China, exactly as Bullitt predicted.
And, of course, we allowed that. Hmm? You know, the United States accommodated that.
We accommodated by giving 600 shiploads of lend-lease to Stalin, which were promised at the Yalta conference, in exchange for his ending the war. He also got control of North Korea as a reward for helping win, quote-unquote, win the Pacific War, which, of course, led to the Korean War and the current North Korean dictatorship. So the hypocrisy is absolutely amazing. It's amazing that these things aren't pointed out in history classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, that's deliberate, I'm sure.
Well, just to carry on, we talked at the outset about Illuminati objectives for the Second World War, and it's very much a goal of Franklin D. Roosevelt to get us into that war despite his public protestations to the contrary. Now, he initially, as you, I'm sure you know, Deanna, he offered provocations to Germany, and actually he and Winston Churchill were old hands at false flags. Many of your listeners, I know, are familiar with how the Lusitania, the sinking of the Lusitania, was contrived in 1915 to inflame public opinion against Germany. At that time, Winston Churchill was head of the British Admiralty, and Franklin D. Roosevelt was Assistant Secretary of the Navy, which sends chills up your spine when you see these two men now as heads of state right at the outset of World War II. Now, President Roosevelt, to provoke Germany, he was looking for another Lusitania. He started sending, you know, of course, the destroyers to Britain, massive convoys of weapons being sent to Britain. We occupied Iceland, and we depth-charged U-boats, but the Germans weren't going for it this time. They, you know, we fell for it once, and we're not going to sink American shipping this time and get you involved because that cost us the First World War. I give you a quote here that you might not have heard, Dan. I don't know if you've heard it before. It's from Admiral Dönitz, who was the commander, of course, mm-hmm. of the German submarine fleet. And this is what he said at Nuremberg, quote, a 300-mile safety zone was granted to America by Germany when international law called for only a 3-mile zone. I suggested minefields at Halifax and around Iceland, but the Fuhrer rejected this because he wanted to avoid conflict with the United States. When American destroyers in the summer of 1941 were ordered to attack German submarines, I was forbidden to fight back. I was thus forced not to even attack British destroyers for fear there might be a mistake, unquote, Admiral Dönitz. So Churchill and and Roosevelt are bending over backwards to provoke the Germans, but they're having none of it. They're not going to attack American shipping. So the attention now turns to Japan. And here's what his FDR's Interior Secretary, Harold Ickes, said. He said, quote, our best entrance into the war would be by way of Japan. And Lieutenant Commander Arthur McCollum of Naval Intelligence presented President Roosevelt with an 8-step plan of provocation against Japan. And it closed with these words, quote, if by these means Japan could be led to commit an overt act of war, so much the better, unquote. So that's that autumn, 1941, their meeting, the cabinet's meeting, and I'm going to quote now from the diary of the Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and also Skull and Bones. Here's what he wrote, quote, we face the delicate question of the diplomatic fencing to be done so as to be sure Japan is put into the wrong and makes the first bad move, overt move. The question was how we should maneuver them into the position of firing the first shot, unquote. Henry Stimson, after meeting with President Roosevelt. And I'll also give you a quote from the British side. This is from Sir Oliver Littleton. He's a member of Churchill's cabinet, the Minister of Production. Here's what he said to the American Chamber of Congress in London, June the 20th, 1944. Quote, Japan was provoked into attacking the Americans at Pearl Harbor. It is a travesty on history to ever say America was forced into the war, unquote. Now, the provocations given Japan, Deanna, they involved incremental trade embargo measures, but the severest measures came in July of 1941, when suddenly the United States in Britain froze and seized all Japanese assets. We closed the Panama Canal to their shipping, and we instituted an all-out trade embargo, most critically oil. And, you know, no modern nation can survive without oil. And for a long time, Deanna, I pondered why it was that all these measures occurred in July of 1941. And you know what my conclusion is? Why that month that so many things were heaped upon Japan?
Why?
You know what happened on June the 22nd, 1941? Operation
Yes.
Barbarossa began.
Right.
And all the reports coming into Washington was that this was not just the invasion by Germany. It was the armies of Finland and Romania and Hungary and Italy and Croatia. And as I'm sure you know, many Belgians and Spaniards joined that invasion. This is an attempt to close out Stalin. And as hundreds of thousands of Russian troops were surrendering, and when they used to say when they surrendered in those early days, they'd say Stalin kaput. Well, Stalin, of course, is terrified that his enemy Japan, which has been fighting him in Manchuria, is now going to declare war. He's going to be caught in a vise. So now it is vitally important in July of 1941 to make sure that Japan does not attack Russia. And, of course, when you cut off oil, there's no chance they can get that. They can't get oil in Siberia, but they can get it in the south in the Dutch East Indies, where they have rich oil fields, and all the other raw materials that are being denied are in the south. This is why we have the Japanese moving south instead of attacking Russia. We'll pick this up after the break.
All righty. Be right back in 3 minutes.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity. Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll free 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
That moment of panic. Sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone. Frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. WhatLiesInYourDebt.com has solutions. WhatLiesInYourDebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few $1,000s during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
This is Deanna. Our guest today is James Perloff, and he's talking about Pearl Harbor. And so please continue.
Okay, well, I don't mean to suggest that the Japanese had a definite plan to join Operation Barbarossa, but war with Russia was not off the table. But there was definitely an Illuminati concern that the Soviet Union, which they had funded and created, was going to be squeezed in a two-front war. And what basically ensured Pearl Harbor was going to happen was November 26, 1941, Secretary of State Cordell Hull gave an ultimatum to the Japanese as we're negotiating with them. And the ultimatum, it contained several points, but basically it broke down to pull all your troops completely within Japan, take them out of Manchuria, out of China, which meant, of course, giving Stalin a free hand in Asia, and also to break their tripartite pact with Italy and Germany. And of course, if anybody came along and told us we had to pull our troops within our borders and break our treaties with other countries, we wouldn't put up with it, and the Japanese did not either. They were facing economic strangulation. Even 75% of their food imports were cut off. Japan was heavily dependent on imports. So faced with this embargo, which is basically an act of war in itself, they decided they would rather, as they put it, fighting rather than die sitting down. And we should next talk about the bait that was given to the Japanese and the decision to base the fleet at Pearl Harbor, because that's very important. In late 1940, President Roosevelt ordered the fleet to be moved from the West Coast to Pearl Harbor. And the commander, fleet commander at that time was Admiral J.O. Richardson, and he flew into a rage. Speaking of flying, he flew to Washington to speak to Roosevelt, and he gave the president a host of reasons why this was a terrible decision. If you take a look at a map of Pearl Harbor at the time, 1941, the ships were boxed in like sardines, you know, one ship next to another. Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, was approachable by potential attackers from 360 degrees of uninhabited ocean. It would be safe, of course, if it remained based on the west coast of the United States. You couldn't attack from the east or the north or the south. You'd have to attack from the west, and with all the commercial shipping you'd have to cross, you'd never be able to make a surprise attack. But there are other reasons that Richardson gave Roosevelt as well. We're going to have to supply the fleet across 2,000 ocean miles. Personnel would have to cross the Pacific if needed personnel changes. Pearl Harbor had very limited dry docks and oil storage. 37% of the Hawaiian population was of Japanese ancestry, which made it ideal for Japanese espionage, if not sabotage, on the fleet. And also, he said, you know, basing the fleet away from the men's homes and families is going to be very destructive to morale. So he had more than half a dozen reasons to give Roosevelt to not put the fleet at Pearl Harbor. The only reason Roosevelt could give, he told Richardson, it'll have a deterrent effect on the Japanese and will deter Japanese aggression. And, Deanna, do you think that Roosevelt was right about that?
No, obviously not.
As of December the 7th, 1941, everyone knew that Roosevelt was not right in thinking that putting the fleet at Pearl Harbor would deter Japanese aggression. But who shoulders the blame for this? Of course, it's going to be the military and not President Roosevelt, who will come out smelling like roses. I should mention that after this meeting with President Roosevelt, J.O. Richardson was fired as fleet commander, and he was given no reason. And he sent a message to the Navy Secretary, Frank Knox, and he said, Frank, you know, it's very unusual to be dismissed without being given a reason why. So Knox told him, President Roosevelt will meet with you, but President Roosevelt never did meet with him. And finally, Knox simply told him, your meeting with the president made him unhappy. That was the word he used, unhappy. The next thing we should talk about is Washington's foreknowledge of the Pearl Harbor attack, and there were several means by which Washington knew that the attack on Pearl Harbor was coming. Japan communicated to its embassies throughout the world through a special code called the Purple Code. It was so complex it had to be enciphered by a machine and deciphered by a special machine. And the Japanese were confident no one could break that code. But we had very talented cryptanalysts in the War Department, and they succeeded in breaking the code. And Washington had its own purple machines. And we were decoding the diplomatic messages usually on a same-day basis, and every day those messages would be sent in a lock pouch to President Roosevelt, as well as Secretary of State Cordell Hull, the Army Chief of Staff, George Marshall. There were nine people on the official list, but there's also one unofficial person. That was Harry Hopkins, who was really thought by many to be Franklin Roosevelt's controller from Wall Street. He served basically the purposes of Bernard Baruch and the Wall Street set, and he got to see those messages as well. Well, what did these messages reveal, the purple decoding messages? They revealed that the Tokyo had told its Washington envoys that November 25th was a deadline for an agreement with the United States, and then it was pushed up to November the 29th, and the message said, the deadline absolutely cannot be changed. After that, things are automatically going to happen, unquote. November the 30th, we decoded a message to the Berlin embassy to tell the Germans that, quote, the breaking out of war may come quicker than anyone dreams. We also decoded messages from Tokyo to the Consul General of Hawaii, ordering him to divide Pearl Harbor into five areas and start reporting the exact locations of warships and dock. Now, Deanna, there's nothing strange about spies watching ship movements, but when they want to know where each ship is located on a grid, it's obvious that the ships have been set up for destruction. But Washington felt that this was not important for Admiral Kimmel, who was the new Pacific Fleet commander in Hawaii, or General Short, the Army commander in Hawaii, to know. Also, 1 week before the attack, we decoded a message instructing the Japanese to start destroying all the secret documents. Why? Because once war broke out, they were going to lose their diplomatic immunity. Now, here's a real killer. There was a movie made in 1970 called Tora, Tora, Tora about Pearl Harbor, and it shows shows the Japanese ambassadors presenting Cordell Hull with the declaration of war, and Hull is just amazed that war has begun. He's absolutely shocked and surprised. But
sure.
In point of fact, he'd already read the decoded intercept of the declaration of war, as had President Roosevelt. It was no surprise at all. Well, in addition to the purple decodings, there were other means that Washington knew about the war and coming in the Pearl Harbor attack. One was this. Not all Japanese offices had a purple decoding machine. They had to have some means of communicating to these smaller offices that war was about to begin. And they gave them several potential messages. One was in the event of war with Russia, but the message of in case of war with the United States was Higashi no Kaze Ami, meaning east wind, rain. East wind meant the United States, rain meant war. And on December the 4th, that message was transmitted to all those by Radio Tokyo. It was picked up by American intelligence. So everybody in the War and Navy departments knew for a fact on December the 4th that we were on the verge of war. I should add to this, though, in addition to these intercepts, there were many personal warnings given to the Roosevelt administration. In early 1941, our ambassador to Japan, Joseph Grew, sent this message to Washington, quote, "The Peruvian minister has informed a member of my staff that he's heard from many sources, including a Japanese source, that in the event of trouble breaking out between the United States and Japan, the Japanese intended to make a surprise attack against Pearl Harbor with all their strength," unquote. Now, another warning came from Brigadier General Elliot Thorpe. He was a U.S. military observer in Java, which was under Dutch control at that time. The Dutch Army had also decoded a message from Tokyo to Bangkok forecasting the Pearl Harbor attack. Thorpe was so alarmed, he sent a total of 4 warnings to the War Department in Washington until he was told to send no further warnings concerning Pearl Harbor. And you can see Brigadier General Elliot Thorpe interviewed on YouTube in the BBC documentary made in the 1980s called Sacrifice at Pearl Harbor. In addition to this, the Dutch had their military attaché in Washington, Colonel F.G.L. Weigeman, personally warned George Marshall, the Army Chief of Staff, about Pearl Harbor before the attack. President Roosevelt was advised by J. Edgar Hoover of the attack. He got his information from Desko Popov. Popov was a Yugoslavian double agent working for both the Nazis and us, but his true allegiance was to us. He learned from the Germans of the plan of the Japanese to attack Pearl Harbor. He informed Hoover. Hoover informed the president, and you can see Popov interviewed in that same documentary, Sacrifice at Pearl Harbor, as well as books on this subject. Senator Guy Gillette of Iowa was contacted by Kyiltsu Han. He was a Korean and was in contact with the Korean underground. And Han had gotten nowhere with the State Department, finally got an audience with Senator Gillette. He told him about the Pearl Harbor attack. Senator Gillette then had an audience with President Roosevelt, who said the matter will be looked into. And I'll give you a quote next from Congressman Martin Dies, who came into possession of a map revealing the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And here's what he wrote, quote, "As soon as I received that document, I telephoned Secretary of State Cordell Hull and told him what I had. Secretary Hull directed me not to let anyone know about the map. Instead, he would call me as soon as he had talked to President Roosevelt. In about an hour, he telephoned to say he had talked to Roosevelt, and they agreed to be very serious if any information concerning this map reached the news services. I told him it was a grave responsibility to withhold such vital information from the public. The secretary assured me that he and Roosevelt considered it essential to national defense," unquote, United States Congressman Martin Dies.
Amazing. Jim, we do have to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steinblock, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's S-T-E-M-G-E-V-I-T-Y. Stemgevity.com. or call now toll-free, 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
For many years, coffee lovers have learned that for the freshest coffee, you need to roast your own beans. Unfortunately, that usually meant paying more per pound for coffee than you could get it at the local grocery. Those wanting to store rich coffee for long-term use have been frustrated with the lack of quality coffee available with a long shelf life. So we usually settle for brand name coffee, either ground or instant. But now we have another solution. Canned green coffee beans. Green coffee beans have not been roasted. And since the bean is not cracked yet, the shelf life is many years longer than roasted or ground coffee. Due to the way it's packed, you can expect these to stay fresh for 20 plus years. Go to campingsurvival.com to order your canned green coffee beans. A single can is only $11.94. Order online today at campingsurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. Campingsurvival.com. Campingsurvival.com.
It's no secret that Big Brother is spying on your web activity. VPNForAll.com protects your internet from tyranny with military-grade encryption. VPNForAll keep no records of your browsing, so you leave no trace. VPNForAll are in Holland, free from the NSA and police state jurisdiction. Easy to sign up and use. It stops all data mining. Go to VPNForAll.com immediately and stay safe. That's VPN, the number 4, all.com.
I'm Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America, and I want to invite you to join the Second Amendment movement with Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. Take action by becoming a GOA member today by going to gunowners.org. Gun Owners members receive the GOA newsletter, fact sheets, alerts, certificates, and more. But there's more to joining GOA than just a list of member benefits. The united voice of GOA members has been successful in defeating restrictive legislation designed to disarm our population. GOA has helped get strong constitutional members of Congress like Senator Ted Cruz elected. And with your help, GOA will continue to successfully defend the rights of gun owners in the courts. Participate in our efforts to restore and preserve the nation's right to keep and bear arms. All contributions to our lobbying efforts are used exclusively to support or oppose firearms legislation. Join online at gunowners.org.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Deanna, our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, available at Amazon. And today he's talking about Pearl Harbor. And it's very interesting, you mentioned about the decoding machines. And MacArthur, Douglas MacArthur, was in the Philippines at the time. And it would have been very crucial for him to have one of those, but he didn't have one. And of course, after Pearl Harbor, they attacked the Philippines and took out Clark Air Base and a lot of the planes there.
And then proceeded the Bataan Death March.
Yes.
Well, we were talking before, and I should mention that before this program is out, I'll list a number of resources people can go to find documentation of all these facts.
Okay.
But to continue with the foreknowledge of Pearl Harbor, we've talked about the Purple Machines, we've talked about the radio message East Wind Rain, and we talked about the personal warnings. Another method of knowing about Pearl Harbor came to light more recently, a little over a decade ago, with the book Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett. He used the Freedom of Information Act, and he found something that no previous investigator of Pearl Harbor had known. It was so top secret. We'd not only cracked the diplomatic code, the purple code, we'd also cracked Japan's naval codes, and we're reading those messages as well. and it had long been assumed that as the Japanese fleet was approaching Pearl Harbor, maintained complete radio silence, but that is not the case. They had to communicate, and they did they observed discretion, but not complete silence. And the most important intercept was this one, Admiral Yamamoto, the Japanese First Air Fleet, November the 26th, 1941, quote, "The task force, keeping its movement strictly secret and maintaining close guard against submarines and aircraft, shall advance into Hawaiian waters, and upon the very opening of hostilities shall attack the main force of the United States fleet and deal it a mortal blow. The first air raid is planned for the dawn of X day, exact date to be given by later order," unquote. Now, I'd like to give you one more quote affirming this foreknowledge. And this is from Helen Heyman. She was the daughter of Don Smith, who was director of the Red Cross's war service before World War II. This is from the June 2nd, 2001 Washington Times. "Shortly before the attack in 1941, President Roosevelt called him, my father, to the White House for a meeting concerning a top-secret matter. This meeting, the president advised my father that his intelligence staff had informed him of a pending attack on Pearl Harbor by the Japanese. He anticipated many casualties and much loss. He instructed my father to send workers and supplies to a holding area. When he protested to the president, President Roosevelt told him the American people would never agree to end the war in Europe unless they were attacked within their own borders. He followed the orders of his president and spent many years contemplating this action, which he considered ethically and morally wrong. I do not know the Kimmel family, therefore would gain nothing by fabricating the situation. However, I do feel the time has come for this conspiracy to be exposed, and Admiral Kimmel vindicated of all charges. In this manner, perhaps both he and my father may rest in peace," unquote. Helen Heyman, daughter of Don Smith, director of the Red Cross's war service. And before we talk about the Pearl Harbor investigations, the official investigations, I'd like to talk about what was going on the morning of December the 7th. The full declaration of war, a break in relations with the United States, had already been decoded in both the Navy and War Department. In the Navy Department, Admiral Stark, who was the Chief of Naval Operations, was shown the message. Junior officers begged him to notify Pearl Harbor because the Japanese had given their ambassador very specific instructions that the declaration of war must be delivered exactly at 1 p.m. Washington time. Now, the Japanese had a history of making surprise attacks coordinated with declarations of war. For example, they attacked Port Arthur when they declared war on Russia in 1905. And 1 o'clock Washington time was just after dawn in Hawaii, and everybody understood this what this meant. But Admiral Stark would not notify Pearl Harbor, and later he said that his conscience was clear because all of his actions were directed by what he called a higher authority, and the only higher authority he had was President Roosevelt. But I'd particularly like to call attention to Chief of Staff George Marshall. Now, in the War Department, Colonel Rufus Bratton, he was head of the Far Eastern Section in the War Department, had seen the message, the full declaration of war, and he was told he could do nothing unless General Marshall, the Chief of Staff, arrived. So he tried reaching Marshall at home, and was repeatedly told the general is out on a horseback ride. Well, this horseback ride lasted for 2.5 hours, and as we'll see in a moment, he was not out riding a horse at all. He finally came home and talked to Bratton on the phone. He said he'd come to the War Department. It took him 75 minutes to make the 10-minute drive. He sits down, looks at the Declaration of War for a long time, and the officers around them are just urging him to call Pearl Harbor. It's 12:30. The Japanese planes are on the way, but if he picked up the phone and called Pearl Harbor, our men still could have been at their guns. Instead, he said, "You know, I can't call. The Japs might have the phone lines tapped."
Oh,
and he refused to use the phone or Army or Navy radio. You know how he notified Pearl Harbor? He used Western Union. He sent a telegram. It was not even marked urgent, and I'm not making this up. General Short received the message, the Western Union message, 6 hours after the attack, and 2 hours later, Admiral Kimmel got his copy. And let's talk for just a moment about Marshall. This man had been dismissed by General MacArthur in peacetime, because in command of a peacetime regiment, the regiment's reputation had fallen so low, but he helped out with Roosevelt's CCC, the Conservation Corps, Civilian Conservation Corps, came to the attention of Harry Hopkins, and all of a sudden he's shot above the heads of many senior officers to become chief of staff. Now, after what happened at Pearl Harbor, he should not have been trusted with any position, but in 1945 he became Truman's special envoy to China, where he enjoined truces upon Chiang Kai-shek, which freed up the communist troops to regroup, came home, became Secretary of State, as such, imposed a weapons embargo against the nationalists, which ensured that the communists would win in China. 1947, he announces the Marshall Plan, named for him, even though he had nothing to do with thinking it up. Of course, the Marshall Plan enriched U.S. multinational corporations at the expense of U.S. taxpayers and set the ground for the European Union. Then, during the Korean War, you'll recall that General MacArthur had almost won that war. He'd pushed the communists back to the Yalu River, and all of a sudden the Chinese started sending their troops across the Yalu. And General MacArthur ordered the bridges to be bombed, which would have won the war. But guess who's Secretary of Defense and reverses that order? George Marshall. And this is a terrible foreshadowing, of course, of the betrayal of our men in Vietnam. And I should point out that Joe McCarthy wrote a book about George Marshall. It was called America's Retreat from Victory, the story of George Catlett Marshall. And that it gives you a major reason why the establishment decided to destroy Joe McCarthy. You know, they didn't mind his going after minor communists in the State Department. When he attacked Marshall, he was going after one of the big boys. But let's just mention the horseback ride before the break. He was not on a horseback ride for those 2.5 hours on the morning of December the 7th. You know what he was? His cover was blown inadvertently by Arthur Upham Pope, who wrote a biography of the Soviet ambassador, Maxim Litvinov. On the morning of December the 7th, 1941, Litvinov arrived in Washington and was met at the airport by General George Marshall, who I'm sure told him not to worry, just go to the White House because you're about to be in a position to get unlimited lend-lease from the United States of America. That's where he was, meeting the Soviet ambassador instead of being at the War Department where he should have been on the morning that Pearl Harbor was about to be bombed.
Wow. Oh, what an awful thing. What a terrible thing, and they do it repeatedly. And well, as you mentioned, they did it with the Lusitania. And Churchill mentioned that when live bait is concerned, that people, if Americans are killed, then America will stand up for those that are killed. And they use that that live bait tactic every time.
Well, it happened with the Maine, it happened with Lusitania, it happened with Pearl Harbor, and it happened with 9-1-1.
Exactly.
And so this is all part of a pattern. That's what I want to make clear. This is part of a pattern. It's a continuum through history with the same forces behind it who are on their own continuum.
Absolutely. Well, fascinating information. Okay, we are coming up on our 1 hour, our top of the hour break. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour with our guest today. And do be sure and look for his books. His one book, that his most recent one, is Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and that is at Amazon. And he's talked about that book a couple of times on our program. It's a fascinating read. Anyway, we will be back at 6 minutes after the hour.